If you're just tuning in, this is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. For National Poetry Month, we're talking about poetry here on Kenai Conversation. Our guests are Brent Johnson, Georgie Everly, Clark Whitney, and Steve Schoonmaker. So we've talked a lot about creative process and craft. I want to talk a little bit as well about performance. And Clark, you were just talking about how about kind of the vulnerability of getting up and talking. How does one overcome the fear of putting yourself out there and of stage fright? Is that something any of you struggled with? I mean, Georgia, you mentioned how you kind of stumbled into Fisher Poets. What was it like getting up on stage for the first time in front of people you didn't know that well and putting yourself out there and reading your poems to an audience for the first time?
Yeah, you know, to get on stage and share something that for me at the time was so new, to amidst a group of people that had been immersed in Fisher poetry for far longer than me, that was intimidating for sure. I've been on stage before in life. I've got a history of activism and enjoy singing and such. So the stage is not so frightening for me. I would say every time I get butterflies, every time my heart races. I'd say the more you do it, the not easier it gets, but you get just a little more comfortable and you can flow a little better. But yeah, I would say that was the big thing for me with Fisher Poetry was really just trying to hang with this group of people that were so polished and so experienced with it, and who've been fishing for far longer than me too. And it was really an honor to be so welcomed into that community as well. I mean, especially with my poet friends here on the Kenai, they've been amazing in welcoming me as the new poet. So yeah, that was the big thing is, you know, just who you stand amongst, you know, giants in this industry, really, with poetry. Man, you should see it in Astoria. Some of those guys are really old and they've been doing it for decades. And it is just incredible to be able to be a part of that and to see that because, man, you know, in 10, 20 years, the scene is going to look really different and those fishermen aren't going to be around. So it's really just an incredible opportunity. I have a lot of gratitude that I've been so welcomed into it. And it's just such an amazing group of people, truly.
Does anyone else want to talk about performing and how that's been?
Steve? Yeah, I could say something there. You know, I mentioned I was at the college when I first kind of started with this. And there's a man in Anchorage, I don't believe he's still there. His name is Kima Hamilton. Kima Hamilton was a rapper. Really good rapper. He gave a workshop on slam poetry, which I didn't really know what it was. I went down there and I shared my poetry and we became pretty good friends. He said, man, you got to memorize your stuff. He said, it's going to be way easier for you to memorize your stuff, man. Oh, well, that's a little bit of work. You know, I wasn't used to it. And then I saw a kid at open mic coming down from Anchorage and he was all over the place, talking and moving around, making eye contact. And after the event, I asked him about it. He goes, Kima Hamilton. And it reminded me. So I started memorizing my poetry. I've been through so many dangerous and embarrassing situations in my life that the stage thing didn't really bug me. But what's cool was, is when I memorized it, then I could be in contact, eye contact with the audience. I could move my body around. I could, you know, I could perform. Sometimes people would say, oh man, you should send your poetry to this contest. And it, you know, it's one thing on a page. It's another when you perform it. A book's coming one of these days, but I've been making CDs mostly because of that reason. Because it's one animal on the page, it's one animal when it's performed. I love it. It's a high to be on stage, particularly when you're interacting with the audience. You know, when you can see them. That's why Zoom was kind of tough for me. Wow. For me, that's probably the richest part of this whole thing. I mean, creating stuff is cool. And when you got something that, but the best part is when you can make this painting, so to speak, and take it to the gallery, so to speak, which is the stage. And wow. That's the best part for me is performing. All winter long, I was hurting. No open mic. Oh, man. Well, now I'm starting to go back to open mic. And now what I like to do is collaborate. I'll get up on stage and some of my musician friends will join me and we'll totally wing it with poetry. When you can do a certain level of relaxed setting and you get around people that you feel comfortable with, magic can happen. You know, and I'm not experienced with teaching children, you know, but I think perhaps kids might have that advantage in a way. They're not maybe so intimidated. They're, you know,
what's so guarded?
Yes, they haven't been suppressed in their exuberance.
I'd love in a little bit to actually read some poems. I'd love to hear from each of you, but before we do that, you mentioned music, and I have to ask. I know that there is kind of a how do I put this? A movement on social media of people being really into sea shanties. I don't know if you guys have seen this. It's kind of, they've kind of made a resurgence among young people who are on TikTok and Instagram. They're kind of doing the rounds on social media right now. Do any of you sing or perform sea shanties, or is that at all part of your practice? I'm so curious. Because this is something that seems to really be kind of sparking quite a movement on TikTok and Instagram right now.
Yeah, that's kind of what I, so when I grew up, my father had an album. It was Burl Ives, Down to the Sea in Ships, and it was all sea shanties. And I was born in Maine, you know, and there's a long tradition there where some of these sea shanties were written. And I saw the video of the Weller Man. And I, when I saw that on Facebook or something, I was just blown away, you know, voices harmonizing. And, you know, sea shanties are work songs and they're written with a cadence. And so, you know, I'd been listening to sea shanties since I was just a little guy. And so when I started writing, my first songs were kind of all sea shanties. I was so surprised and so, excited when I saw that, you know, that young people were getting to sea shanties and you know, they sea shanties connect people in a special way because, you know, it was done in rhythm and I think it's really cool. I love it.
Why do you think they're making a comeback? What do you think about sea shanties is exciting people, a new generation of people on social media?
Well, I think maybe it's because of the isolation from the pandemic that it's a way to connect with people on a visceral level. And I think, you know, it's kind of universal. Music is universal. Poetry and storytelling is one of the, universal traits. Sociologists talk about universal traits, and they're the same across time and across culture. And I think sea shanties are a good representation of that, is something that's universal to humans and human culture.
Georgia, you were nodding. Is there anything that you have to add on that?
Oh, I was nodding for Clark. that was so cool when I first got to share a stage with Clark that a big piece of his set is singing, and it's so fun because the other Peninsula poets that we perform together, that's not a big thing that we do. Meezy does prose, Steve does prose with, I don't know, Steve, I'd say it's a combination of poetry and prose, and mine's mostly rhyming. So it's a cool mix. And yeah, I'm so entertained when Clark sings, because he does such a good job. It's so fun. And yeah, this big trend on social media with sea shanties has been so cool to watch. I know a group of women out of Homer that sing sea shanties together, informally, just kind of hanging out and such. But I admire it so much that they can harmonize and sound so beautiful.
Well, so. That's so cool too, because it yeah. seems like historically sea shanties are sung by men working on boats. So very cool to for a group of women to be actually doing that.
Yeah, definitely. It's cool. And seeing online on social media, there's a lot of women doing it as well. And, you know, they've got a higher register. And so those, I mean, really just crystal clear, beautiful words. And I love the sad stuff, you know. So the funny stuff, it's fun. But man, that evoking that emotion, there's nothing like that.
Well, we have about 15 minutes left, so I think it'd be a good time maybe to start sharing some poems. I don't want to put anyone on the spot, but does anyone want to go first?
Sure, I will.
Steve?
Yeah. This poem, I read a book, most of a book that Alan Watts wrote. It's called Watercourse Way. It was about Taoism. And then when I started thinking about water, and the way it's without exertion, you know, it doesn't control, you know, it evaporates and it comes back, it breathes in and breathes out. And so it inspired me to write this poem. It's kind of based on my experience out of Cordova where I fish in the summertime. It's called Watercourse Way. From where I am in this world, there's a small harbor town where the pulse of vitality is the ocean and the sound and the streams of the uplands. Yeah, and the constants of rain and fish and fleet and muscle with acute growing pains, maintaining those harvests the loans have to claim, where the salmon know not but anadromous ways, ancient as rains that are gathered away with the souls of the flows down our watercourse ways. From where I am in this world, I face a rare place, a sea in the land of wild beauties embraced, entangled in conflicts and surviving resolves, extending life forward as the planet revolves with the cogs and the wheels of technology's race, pushing the boundaries of wide open space in the glare of our headlights at a speed limit's pace, down the lines and the curves and the age of my face, down the foam and the curls and the waves of my wakes, down the watercourse ways that know no mistakes, only clouds, rains, and trickles, to the rivers and the lakes, only flow and let go of what's time and what's place. From where I am in this world, in a corner, still wild, all caught with such forces with a heart like a child, to spill with conditions or shine like the bay, riding high on such beauty, but in conflict each day, where the being is salty and stressful and loud, and the catching is brutal and grateful and proud. And each of us caught in the pull of our pay that'll run through our hands like the rain and the spray. Season by season, come what may, come what may. Season by season, that watercourse way. From where I am in this world, feeding more than my needs, where the catch of my net is what others will eat. Oh, there's so many others that know not of the sea or of anadromous ways or of wild ocean's needs, where habitat losses may continue to lead in directions away from sustainable Steve. From where I am in this world, as I hold in my grip all the lines and the nets and the gills of the fish, I claim as a living, yes, I claim as my own. From where I am in this world, simply flesh, blood, and bone. From where I am in this world, just one simple man with a boat and a net by a sea and a land, a sea so achieving by a land so alive, a future uncertain by a past known to thrive. So easily claimed with anadromous ways, ancient as rains down our watercourse ways. From where I am in this world, down the lows, up the highs, where the Gulf of Alaska has rewarded our tries, with the flesh of our fisheries on which we rely, flesh innate and instinctual as all humankind. However domestic our perceptions align, disguised or unconscious of what keeps us alive. Alive is not separate where the sun lights the day. It's all held in the flows of the lands as they lay at the confluence of beauty and conflict each day, where the salmon know not but anadromous ways, ancient as rains that are gathered away with the souls of the flows that the sea will regain, so allowed by the sky and the land to replay and that sparkling shine down our watercourse ways. Watercourse Way.
Thank you. That was beautiful. Should we snap?
Thank you. Thanks.
A little snapping. Thank you for that. Brent.
Once they snapped at me before. I like that.
Yeah. That's what I learned in school to do, but I'm not sure if that's actually practiced in reality. Brent, how about you? I'd love to hear a poem from you.
Here's a poem. It's called A Stale Tale. I probably wrote it 15, 20 years ago. I don't know. Old Mother Hubbard went to the cupboard to fetch her sweet dog a cracker. When she got there, she gave a blank stare. What in the heck was I after? But doggy, quite sharp, begged a slight bark, every bone in his body beguiled. At once Hubbard recalled, her mystery was solved. She picked up the package and smiled. Except this hardtack was bought, or D-Day was fought, which left it inedibly stale. Puppy didn't know, his eyes were aglow, and he wagged his shag little tail. The offering was opened, like doggy was hoping. Weathered old Hubbard was kind. Dog gulped them right up, though they tasted corrupt, and never whimpered or whined. Frugality has a limit. Doggy died in a minute. A bugle moaned news of the cracker. Before your next bite, you very well might read close the date on the wrapper.
Wow. Is that based on a true story?
Oh, heck no. You know, I don't know what gets you started on a poem.
That was great.
You go on, and once you're writing it, you go, hey, what can we put in here next?
And you said that was called A Stale Tale?
A Stale Tale.
Thank you. That was awesome. That was wonderful. I wish we had more time to talk about all these poems, but I know we're coming up on the hour, so let's keep going. Georgie, how about you?
Yeah, so this is one of the newer ones I've wrote. I did it for Fisher Poets this year. I wrote this last summer toward the end of the season in Cookin' Lit, which was a tough season, a really tough season. And I wrote this poem for someone, and it's like, you know, it's, you've seen Harry Potter, you know that he who must not be named is the villain. So there's a villain in this tale. Ooh. And so this poem is called The 1 Cent Man. Nickels and dimes, the 1 cent man, waged a war which he'd compete against set net schemes and drifters' dreams, kings and queens of the commercial fleet. Their way of life from weathered hands, forged salty crown with sweat, would fall like bricks or boots that kick and muddy up in a low tide set. They built this town, they gave it life, history, commerce, trade, but none remember from flames and embers they rose, an empire made. Honor once adorned their halls, warm light to slowly dim, empty plates to commiserate of the war that would begin. The wriggling red gilt dollar bills these battles represent, the 1 cent man, his wicked plan, and his copper coins well spent. 1,000 cuts, 10,000 tides that erode a bluff with time, the winds that wear and fingers tear year by year and line by line. The blood, the slime, the silver scales starve the rain gear kids of this, their inheritance at great expense, the prospects they will miss. Now to overthrow the crown they forged, a 1 cent army in his name, a mounting horde with spear and sword, to the saltwater place your blame. There's too many gillnets in the surf, they overfish the stock, and like cash and tills his coffers fill with greenbacks to be caught. The 1 cent man, his pockets full of cowards standing tall, his fingers grip the leadership at his beck and call. Feed council form to oversee the laws they'd twist and curve, as old kings plead with eyes that bleed, no justice to be served. So now the children migrate west to waters rich with gold. The nets they cast now fill up fast, boats and permits sold. So congratulations, 1 cent man, go wring your crooked hands. With a sweeping feat, you've starved the fleet, but the young ones still will stand. They will return, those rain gear kids, the heirs of queens and kings. They won't forget the blood and sweat of the crown the poets sing. They wait in turn when time is right to rise with the coming dawn, with set net schemes and drifters' dreams, the one sent man long dead and gone.
Wow.
Very nice.
Thank you. That was wonderful. Thank you for reading that. Clark, do you have a poem to share with us?
I do. Should I do a poem or should I sing a sea chanty that I wrote?
Well, I know which one I would love you to do. Would you be willing to do a sea shanty for us?
Yeah, I can do this one. This is one of the first. This is one of the first ones I ever wrote, and sometimes I don't know where inspiration comes, and this one just kind of appeared in my head. I heard someone describe it and say that poems are out there, and songs maybe are out there floating around, and if you're lucky, you can reach them and grab one and pull it in. This is called, this is about, in Bristol Bay, we have to fish on 32-foot boats, and that's pretty small. And this is about life on a small boat and hunger. And it's called Fisher Stew. I made it through many seasons on cup of noodles and oats from a pouch. But it's hard to work a good day on such fare. An empty stomach makes me a grouch. Well, our boat ain't got a galley, but this Dickinson will do. I found her in the alley, changed the carburetor, cleaned her flue. This living on a small boat is hard for cap and crew, but you know it's all more tasty when I make my Fisher stew. Oh, Fisher stew is hearty. It varies from place to place. And some might call it chowder, and others bouillabaisse. But no matter where it hails from, in port or on the grounds, you know it always tastes good, much better than it sounds. Oh, the crew, they call me skipper. I double as the cook. I happened on this recipe, didn't find it in a book. You know that it was handed down from a mighty famous chef. I met him in a bar one night. I think his name was Jeff. Well, Jeff revealed the recipe for this mighty famous soup. You can find most of the fixings on the deck we call the poop. Throw in salmon, shrimp, and black cod, or a sea duck from the sky. With luck, we'll add a tasty squid or some nice fresh octopi. Then Jeff, the inebriated chef, revealed a true secret to me. Though ingredients will vary when you're out on the sea, you won't need special seasonings to give this meal some zing. When the crew gets tired and hungry enough, they will eat anything.
Oh my gosh, you have to teach us the harmony so we can sing along next time. That was great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. Thank you all for being vulnerable, sharing your poetry, your shanty with us. That was a lot of fun. And I'll be looking forward to the next Fisher Poets to hear you guys again and reading your work. Thank you for sharing that all with us. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
We're coming up on the top of the hour, so we should leave it here. That's going to be all for this week's Kenai Conversation. A huge thank you to all of our guests and poets, Brent Johnson, Georgie Everly, Clark Whitney, and Steve Schoonmaker. I'm Sabine Pooks. Thanks for tuning in.